Welcome to the Child Care Barnfield Podcast. Jeff Johnson here with Lisa Murphy and very special guest Annie Friday. How are you both doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Great.
Delightful. Hey, I got something. We're going to get into a topic Annie's brought to the table. Lisa, I don't know, 300 episodes or so ago, we were talking about technology, and I thought we needed personalized drones for children hovering over them on the playground and the play spaces to keep them safe, that could just kind of swoop down and pick them up. And I don't have a drone, not into drone technology, but I was out on a bike ride the other day, and there was a gentleman with a drone hovering over his head as he pedaled along on the trail, because apparently there's a follow me mode for drones now, and you can do this. Now I looked on the Amazon after I got home to check this out, and all the people doing this on the Amazon are like really fit, and they're doing fancy stuff on their skateboards and snowboards and bikes. This was just another big schlubby guy like I am pedaling along. So I don't think he was, I don't know, maybe his wife had him tracking him to make sure he didn't have a heart attack or something. But I just wanted to throw that out there, that the technology is approaching the point where children will have their hover drones, because this thing had these things have $55. I can get one with two high definition cameras that'll follow me around. And for another $100 over that, you can get one that's actually good at this. So it's not going to be long before they have the little graspers that can reach down and pull the kid up when they start falling off the play structure or whatever. So
I always appreciate it when, Jeff, you update our listeners to the weird random things you occasionally throw out that 3-4 years later manifest.
You know,
I'm gonna call you Nostradamus here in a little bit.
Look, I've been looking for the ones where I get things wrong, but I just haven't
found
them.
Oracle of Delphi right here, people. Well, so to that though, like once in a blue moon, because I don't hunt this shit down, but you know, somebody will post something or you'll see something on TV where it's like catches the surfer in this absolutely amazing wave, right? And you're like, how did they capture that? And sure as shit, down at the bottom, it's like captured with drone, you know, I don't know, you have to put the name of it or whatever down there. Yeah. You know, so I can understand that there's, you know, potentially some intrigue to that, but like for following the children around the street, you know, no.
Stranger
danger. Back in the old days, the old technology they used to have were those beepers, right? You could like attach something to your kid.
Sure.
And then if they went out amongst a wider zone than what was approved, they got like, I don't know, shocked, like a dog that went with a shock collar. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. And I would rather have half a dozen kids out playing on the playground without an adult in sight, with the drone hovering overhead, just to keep an eye on things. If I had a choice of that adult hovering and being there managing every goddamn thing, compared to the kids having a little bit of freedom, where the adult, I mean, adults are they're built to worry, right?
Yeah, but and I so don't
if,
know.
Let's if wait, that would let the, if that would let the kids off the leash a little bit, I'd be for that.
But let's unpack that for a little bit. Seriously, okay? Because I get where you're going with that. Like the lesser of two evils. The adults on their hovering, but is every kid going to come with their own hovering drone?
You know, let's go point by point. I'll go group drone.
Okay, group drone, but that's still, there's still a parent hovering. They're just not hovering right there. So it's not dealing with the not need to hover piece.
Yeah, but it is giving the kids a little bit more freedom piece, because that drone is 35, 40 feet up in the air.
And you think eventually they're just going to forget that it's there, because it makes such an annoying noise.
You know what? I give them 5 minutes before the kids shoot that drone down.
Cool, throw a rock at it.
Yeah, they're not letting that thing spy on them. Kids are smarter than that. Yeah?
Okay. Well, I'm just throwing out there, you know, you're looking for tech, always looking for technological answers to things. So Annie, you emailed me, I don't know, it's probably 3 months ago now, about a little experience you had involving a toddler. Tell us the story and let's talk about it, because I find this fascinating.
So it was a mom, a friend of mine, a former client through like the prenatal birth world stuff that I do. And she was worried because she had recently been to her 18-month-old well check with the pediatrician and asked very innocently, you know, she's not in this business at all, and said, this is her first and only child. She asked, should I be worried about the lack of socialization for my child? What should I do? And I'm sure it was a well-meaning pediatrician who probably wanted to give an answer, gave the answer of, yeah, look into some Zoom class opportunities to socialize your 18-month-old child. And I was kind of like, no! Like, I wrote a text, you know, it was all my text, and I just wrote this big, long 18, oh no, like, no.
18, no. Oh no.
That's a big no.
One for every month the child is old.
On its face, it does not sound very developmentally appropriate.
Also, seeing as the American Academy of Pediatrics has pretty much said if you're under the age of three, they shouldn't have any screen time.
Well, maybe this is some sort of rogue pediatrician. He doesn't cotton to them American Academy of Pediatric folk.
You know, I remember a pediatrician a few years back telling me, this was when I was a childcare director at a big center, and we were having a problem with parents just medicating their kids and sending them in with a fever, and talked about medication for fevers. And he was saying, you know, we know that medicating a fever isn't the best choice. Let the fever run its course when it's, you know, between this and this, whatever. I'm not a doctor. I'm not giving medical advice here, people. But he said, but sometimes parents are just so desperate. We give an answer just to give an answer, just so that they can say we gave them an answer, like give them Tylenol to keep them comfortable. And so I kind of am thinking like, maybe this was that, like she just gave an answer to give an answer to make the parent feel better, but.
Or maybe considering the real time frame that it's in right now, you know, and depending on where they're located, you know, if it's a complete lockdown community versus, you know, go out and just use your best judgment kind of community.
Sure. And let's dig into this. How big a social circle does an 18-month-old need?
Actually need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And I know that her parents, she's got a two-parent home. They're loving, they're engaged. They cook together, they bake together, they talk to the child. Like, and that was my point to the mom. Like, you've provided your child the exact social opportunities they need at this point as a one-year-old. I mean,
yeah. Well, that I think goes back to a huge problem that we have in thinking that it always has to be more. And when I say we, I just mean as a culture. Like we don't believe that what we are doing is enough.
Mm-hmm. And imagine how much better, I'm guessing, that mother would have felt if the pediatrician would have said some version of that. The child's around humans. Yeah. You have a goldfish or a cat or a hamster or something they can look at once in a while. Yeah. Do you have a tiny outdoor space that you can visit? Yeah. Okay. You're good.
You're fine.
I mean, some version of that maybe would have been a little bit more user-friendly for the parent.
Well, and less stressful, right? Because sure. Now I'm thinking, oh my God, now I need, my doctor said I need to go find a Zoom class, when really it's a maybe not being heard, right? Not being interpreted the way that maybe the pediatrician might have said. And to that though, let's circle back to the little bit of that tech relationship. Maybe there's a grandma or an auntie or somebody that we do chat with on Zoom occasionally so that they know that I have an other that I just am not able to touch at this juncture.
Absolutely. And there have been, like, you know, there are apps like Caribou where you can read stories with kids and play tic-tac-toe, and my kids do that with their grandparents, and it's super fun, and that's a great way to use tech safely with young children. I'm not saying all tech is bad, you know. I personally was really paranoid about screen time as a young mom, even though I probably knew better and should have known better, but the doctors had hammered it home, like, this is the worst evil you can give your kids. And then a year ago we kind of all turned on a dime on that notion. But yeah, so that was exactly it. She was reaching out kind of panicked, like, what Zoom classes do you know about? Where do I get into Zoom classes? How can you, you know, can you recommend any great ones?
And does an 18-month-old know that, can they conceptualize and understand that person on that figure on that flat screen is actually another human being in another location. I don't think they're cognitively there, are they?
I think it would depend on the relationship that they might have had prior.
Sure.
You know, have I seen that? Have I touched, smelled, and sat on that person's lap? And so I can kind of understand or make a connection.
Yeah, I think it's scary that we're thinking that's okay. And I feel the same about two-year-olds and masks. It was on the news this morning that just the other day, another two-year-old got thrown off a fucking airplane because the parents weren't keeping their masks on it. I guess they ended up, they emptied the plane and then they put everybody back on the plane, including the child. They got rid of the flight attendant is what I heard this morning, because the flight attendant was kind of off base with their demands. So that sounds a little bit better, but this has happened a couple times with flights. And so the idea of 2-year-olds even wearing masks just kind of bothers me, because it is so much about that facial experience. And when you're missing half the face, you're missing a lot of information about that interaction. And it just feels, look, I'm uncomfortable with people in masks because I can't read their faces. And I mean, maybe I'm just a wacko, but it's not a pleasant social interaction. Is it just me?
Well, we know you are a wacko. That's
thank you. Thank you for confirming.
But I will say that the kids in my care, and I started the year with a 2-year-old, you know, that shortly turned 3 right after the school year started, but I will say the kids have done better than the adults. And I think the masks bother me more than the kids. I don't make it uncomfortable for them. If they're having a hard time, we find the space or the place they need to be where they can not have their mask on. But yeah, I mean, and it sounds like that flight attendant, I mean, we're all just, I think so many people right now are just riddled with anxiety and making really poor choices. It sounds like that flight attendant just, needed a good therapist and not to take it all out on the 2-year-old on the plane.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people are having it's a struggle in some places. And then there are other places where life is pretty much back to normal, but that's a whole different podcast and episode. So
I'm curious as to whether or not what did the parent do?
Did she do the Zooming?
Oh, my parent?
Yeah.
You know what? I gave her some recommendations of some play groups that were meeting in person, outdoors, socially distanced with masks on. I started there. And then I just also encouraged her to realize that I think that they probably have a very rich social environment for their child at home. That most, yeah. You know, I mean, it's not that long ago that we were all living out in the country hiking. And, you know, like we didn't have the social circles we've had as we do now, today, forever. Kids are okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think giving ourselves permission again to turn down that flame of that we feel that's burning under us a lot of times is a good choice. The toddlers, especially, I mean, when they get a little bit older, maybe there needs to be some more, a wider social circle.
But I think that social circle is often for the adults as well.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that with any judgment at all. But if you're a first time mom and you've been cooped up in your house for a while, it might be the mama who's needing some kind of social. And by social, I don't mean just chatting, you know, I mean, that touch, that sitting in the same room with each other and sharing space together on, I mean, I'm going to say the word intimate, but I don't mean it like that. But, you know, you're sharing real space, not a Zoom screen with each other.
You mean intimate, not intimate.
I like the robotic hand we talked about last time.
Well, I mean, it goes back when we talked about a couple episodes back, Lisa, it goes back on getting kind of in touch with everybody's needs and realizing that you as the adult are the one needing that social interaction and that kind of putting that on the plate of the child is probably a good idea, and being able to pull back and do that if you're tired and stressed and anxious and worried is a real challenging thing probably, but you end up meeting the needs better when you figure out whose needs you're actually concerned with, I think.
Absolutely.
So Annie, before we
wrote a blog post last year titled like "Stop blaming your kid for your social needs" or something, because I saw all these moms like running around town to every library story time and every nature center playgroup or whatever, and they would blame their kids, like, "Oh, my kids just need a ton of socialization," which I mean, it's okay that they were doing it, like you said, no judgment, but like, is it for you maybe? And that's fine too. Just acknowledging it, I think, puts you in a more authentic place to start.
Yeah. Well, and you could get an interaction that is more focused on your actual needs, because if you as the adult one that's needing the interaction, that might be a different experience than toddler story time. So, I mean,
or at least admitting, right, that, you know, we go to three story times because there's three distinct groups of parents that I enjoy hanging out with. And so the story time is just the vehicle for getting my adult need for interaction met, which is totally
cool. And I mean, if those adults were spending time at home with their kids and giving their kids that one-on-one time and then getting together themselves for adult time. Tom, that is how you say it.
That's a whole different podcast.
We're recording too early in the morning to get into that one. Hey, Annie, before we wrap up, I gotta know more about the doulaing. This is a thing that you do that I didn't really know that was in your repertoire. What's the whole process, and how long you've been doing this, and I'd love to learn more.
It's so fun. I have been doing it for a few years now. I got into it as a prenatal yoga teacher.
Doula. Doula-ing, not dueling.
Not dueling.
Not dueling.
Jeff, I was like, Annie Friday does duels? Like Hamilton? Like what?
I'm dipping my toes in that water too, because we've just finished a sword fighting class with a martial arts group here. So I can duel pretty effectively with my foam pool noodle.
You're going to be the dueling doula. Trademark that right now.
Right? I just got a new Instagram handle.
There you go.
No, it's fun. I love it. I actually have found so many links to early childhood, right? Like from the moment your child is born and you watch them do hard things, like learning how to nurse and
breathing,
you know, all that stuff. Like it's hard to get through as a new parent, but I think it leads to such a great path for early childhood and beyond.
So you just like,
I'm not doing a ton of it now because I just opened a school and that's,
yeah. Yeah, not a lot of time on the schedule. So you're like there in the delivery room, and you're and go get them, tiger, and breathe, and here's some ice chips, that kind
exactly.
of
exactly. And I always say a good doula, if they're doing their job right, you think they've done nothing, especially if there's a birth partner involved. Like I'm there to lift up that birth partner, give him the elbow or give her the elbow to say ice chips now, you know, and then also help understand. Sometimes the medical speak gets really jargony and can quickly move over somebody's head, especially when they've got a lot going on in their body and now they're being asked to make decisions in their head, and trying to help them understand what those decisions are.
What is the credentialing process for such a gig?
You know, it's funny. There are some mirrors to childcare licensing where some people think it's a little too stringent and oversteps. But the widest recognized accrediting body is Doulas of North America International. DONA is what it's called. So you get 2 years after you go through a DONA certified training to get enough births, and you have to write like a book report and what else, get some recommendations and things like that, and write your birth stories of what you've done, and submit it all, and they say yay or nay, and then you're approved.
This interests me. If I was looking for another gig, Jeff, the doula dude,
there are doodlas out there. Yes.
Doodla. I think I would be good at this. I'm good with the ice chips. Didn't pass out at the birth of either one of my children. I'm pretty proud of that. There was a moment there where I almost went down, but you know, I think I've learned a lot since then. I can say mucus plug. You know, I think I could do it. Listeners,
mucus plug.
listeners,
without giggling.
Yeah, listeners, I'm not even gonna ask. I'm going to call out if anybody wanted me to do some dueling with them, some test dueling. But no,
see if
don't.
Jeff wants to make a career choice, like an intern.
Yeah, I'd like to maybe. Yeah, Annie, can I come up and intern?
Yes. You know, it's been tricky this year because a lot of hospitals went to no visitors for a while.
Oh, that's
no
good.
And then they went to one visitor. So like, you know, birthing people had to choose between maybe their mom or their partner or a doula who has a little bit more expertise.
Yeah.
So I've actually supported a few births just by text message and FaceTime. And it's actually worked really well.
What are those?
I think I've looked at it and I think there are some ways that you can count. I don't know exactly, but yeah, I think they're being flexible knowing that people have been banned from many hospitals.
So what's the whole hospital side of things? Are the doctors and nurses kind of like, oh, look, you got a doula, are they cool with it? Or are they jerks or what?
It depends on the community, because I think some doulas come in strong and make assumptions about the medical professionals not wanting them in the space. So depending on, it's a lot of relationship building. A lot sure. of people had to work really hard to let doctors and nurses understand that they're there really to make their job run more smoothly. I mean, birth outcomes shoot up with a doula involved, like all the, you know, the positive experiences by parents are increased, things like that. So I think more, they call them baby-friendly hospitals, are realizing the benefits of doulas. I had to fight, actually the first birth I attended was my sister's. I share with her permission that it was a cesarean and we had to make a good case for me to be in the OR with her. They didn't really want me there, but it was really important. And actually I feel like it was almost more important than a vaginal birth, because she was on her own up above the curtain. Everybody else was on the other side and I got to stay with her and just be with her and give her the play by play. And that was really cool.
I realize I can say mucus plug. I'm not sure I can say
vagina.
Vaginal birth. Yeah, I did it. Look at me. I could get the job. Okay. So to circle back to how we started this episode, you need a doula drone where the drone just hovers over in the delivery room. And instead of a camera, it's got the video screen on it. That's got your face on it. And you're kind of droning up to the support person there, whether it's and hey, it's time for some ice chips, and then you're going down and getting the doctor's view just to make sure that they're doing okay, and then everybody the mom's got the earbud in, so your voice is right in her ear, and that way you're there without having to be there with the whole, I mean, just for safety in the OR, it's not having another body in there. It's got to keep the sterile zone a little bit more sterile. I think that's a good idea. Can't wait to report back on this in 300 episodes when it comes to pass. Yeah, the drone doula. I don't know. We'd have to work on the marketing, but you better figure that out and get the website put up soon, because then that expands your potential client list too, because then you can go globally. You could be helping deliver babies in India.
I could be doulaing from the playground while watching 12 kids in the sandbox.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it gets big enough, then you've just got in your basement, you've got set up a workroom as full of doulas working drones all over the world.
I'm into it.
Big doula.
Things that come out of the pandemic.
Hey, people, we'd like to know your thoughts about Big Doula and its influence on the birthing industrial complex. Any other thoughts on this wide-ranging episode that we've just completed? Lisa Murphy just shaking her head. So we've covered drones, toddler Zoom, and dueling. This has been another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill. Back soon. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.